Welcome to the Leadership Journey podcast. I'm Alan Wilson, the host of the podcast. Each week, I'll be chatting to various Christian leaders, discussing some of the things that have contributed to the story of their leadership, and at the same time, encouraging you as you listen to reflect on your own leadership journey. If you've not already subscribed to the podcast, you can do so for free on iTunes or on CastBox. Just look for the Leadership Journey podcast. And it would be great if you're able to take a moment to leave us a review. This week and next, my guest is Lucas Parks. Lucas is pastor of Village Church in East Belfast. Those of you who know Lucas will realise that he's recently come through a season of gruelling treatment for cancer. At the start of the interview, he gives an update on how he's doing. He goes on to talk about his journey from Northern Ireland, where he spent some of his growing up years, to the US and back to Northern Ireland, where he has planted a church. Enjoy the podcast. Lucas, you are very welcome to the Leadership Journey podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you taking time. Just by way of starting, people who know you realise that the past number of months has been a really tough journey for you with illness and so on. Tell us a little bit about how you're doing at the moment.
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Doing better than I was a few months ago. So July of last year, I was diagnosed with cancer. Head and neck cancer. So been a tough journey, but I've got a scan last week that came back clear.
It's wonderful.
For the most part, they're going to check a couple things again in 3 months, but they don't think that's anything serious. They think it's inflammation on the scan. So for clear scan, just trying to come off some powerful drugs at the minute. But nothing. Everything is just kind of normal part of that journey of recovery.
Right, and back to work and preaching and...
Yeah, preaching. Back to work, not quite full-time.
Sure.
But trying to do as much as I can, as much as my body lets me. So fatigue is still a factor, and so just trying to be smart and wise about that, not overdo it. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'd love to come back and chat a little, maybe later in our conversation,
sure.
Maybe even in the second part of this interview. Chat a little bit about what that's been like coming through this season of illness and, how you've related to God and what you've learned through that. I think that'd be encouraging for people to hear all
sure,
of that.
Yeah.
But in terms of your own story, people are going to detect something of an American accent.
Yeah.
But you're not a 100% American, are you?
No.
So tell us a little bit about family background then.
So Mom is from here. Down near the border in a little village called Bessbrook, just outside of Newry. And so my dad's American, so they actually met in Germany. My mom was working there. Dad was stationed in the U.S. Army there. And so that's actually where I was born. I have no other real connection to Germany at all. So after, I think I was probably 3 months old, we moved back here to Northern Ireland and spent my early childhood here. Till
we're in County Armagh.
County Armagh, yeah. And then at the end, we moved up to Craigavon. That's when they were trying to develop Craigavon. Is this?
Did you help build a roundabout?
I did. Yeah. The roundabouts to nowhere. And So I think I did P1 there or nursery school maybe there, and then we moved to the States. Really in the height of the Troubles, 1980, or I think it was, or so. Mm-hmm. So
was that a factor in the family moving?
Yeah, I think so. Certainly, yeah. All the men of actually both sides of my family are in military, law enforcement, security, all that. So, my grandfather, uncles were here, and so, you're always checking your car and stuff during that time. And I remember, some of those early memories and of that. And the company my dad was working for left Northern Ireland, so I think it provided us a little bit of an opportunity at that time to kind of make a decision, and so we decided to go to the States.
Where did you settle in the States then?
Yeah, we kind of settled in Arizona for a while, Tucson, so my siblings were born there, and we were there for, I think, 6 or 7 years, and then we went to Missouri, and that's really where my parents stayed. So that's my mom and sister still live there. My father passed away a couple years ago, but... So Missouri is where I did, secondary education and university, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Was faith a big part of family growing up?
It was, yeah. Yeah. So my grandfather here was really a big part of my mom's faith. And then that in turn was a big part of my faith in that. He was a Presbyterian elder and just a devout man of God. And yeah, probably a little bit of a, took his faith very seriously, and not just in a way that sometimes we can, especially in Northern Ireland, in just kind of a traditional kind of way. But, you know, Bessbrook is a village that has Catholics and Protestants, and both sides of the community would have known my grandfather really well. And, you know, he'd had friends from both sides of the community in and out of his house. And so, yeah, I got to, you know, watch him and see him. And we'd come back and forth here quite a bit. So I was very close to him up until his death a few years ago. And, yeah, so faith was a big part of that.
When did that really become personal for you,
then? Yeah. Yeah, I was probably, I was trying to think about this the other day, the timeline. You know, it's one of those, and I hope this is my kid's story too. I don't ever really remember a time, you know, where, you know, I didn't know and love Jesus. I think it became personal the first time. I was probably 8 years old, somewhere there. And I was watching the Saturday morning kind of cartoons. They went off, a religious TV show came on, and they started basically with a gospel presentation. And I'd heard that before, but in that moment, I really understood it was, you know, my own personal kind of need. And went into the kitchen, started talking to my mom. She got out her Bible and led me to Christ there at the table. So, and, you know, obviously, as we get older, we understand that to you know, deeper degrees, and you know, you kind of recommit that and things like that.
But somebody said to me in a podcast, a previous guest on the podcast about a year ago said, the way he described it was, I gave the little I knew of myself to the little I knew of Christ. And I thought that was a good way to put it, which makes it a genuine, it's a genuine commitment of a child.
Yeah.
And yet there's this scope for so much growing.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's a whole lifelong journey of growing, isn't it?
No, I mean, we're walking through that with our 14-year-old, who made a commitment when she was 11 or 12 just a few years ago, but even now is understanding things to a different degree. And, you know, did I really mean that then? And, you know, those sorts of things. So, yeah.
And so what about education and so on then when you were back in the States?
Yeah, did seminary in the States. And
where was that?
Yeah, well, I started off
Missouri?
In Missouri. I started off in Springfield, Missouri at Baptist Bible College, which was connected to the denomination of the church I was attending at the time, Baptist Church, Independent Baptist Church. And started off there. Realized my theology was probably changing. And so left there and finished at a school that was probably a little more broadly reformed in their approach, which the other church, the other seminary wasn't. So, so I graduated from Covington with a theology degree.
Covington, right. Yeah. Okay. Can you, looking back on that, can you articulate why you chose to go to seminary at all in the first place? Was there some sense of God is calling me here?
No. There wasn't at the beginning.
Yeah. Okay.
So out of high school, I basically had, you know, three options, two of which were kind of police academy, officer school in the Marines, because that's what all the men in my family do. And then I also had a scholarship offer to do broadcast journalism, which I had done some in high school. Mm-hmm. And I just wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I was dating my girlfriend, now wife, at the time, and knew that, you know, the military would probably take me away for a few years and things like that. So I was growing in my faith, wanted to know more about that, and so decided to essentially kind of do a gap year and go to a Bible college for 1 year and try to kind of, you know, grow in my faith. And then hopefully I'd have some more clarity after that year of what I wanted to then do. And it was during that year that I really felt like, oh, no, this is actually an option. And I couldn't imagine doing anything else, actually. So, yeah.
You mean that
ministry,
vocational ministry?
Yeah. I'd never really, you know, never seriously kind of considered that. I had a really good youth pastor who kind of taken me under his wing at the
time.
Who
I think I met.
You did, yeah. He was over.
Yeah,
And so, you know, during that time, I think he as well was kind of like, hey, would you consider that? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, and so it was during that time then that I kind of, yeah, I thought, well, this is actually what I feel called to do. So yeah. It wasn't a Damascus road. It was more of a getting into the shallow end and slowly swimming out into deeper water.
Right, right. Yeah, just going back to Lonnie. So he was your youth pastor. Big influence.
He was, yeah. My mom was probably the biggest Christian influence of my life. My dad was a believer, never really discipled, and so he was a good man. But Lonnie was probably more my, you know, spiritual dad in that sense. And as far as discipling me and I think, you know, seeing maybe early leadership qualities and things like that and nurturing those. So
what do you think he noticed?
Yeah. I guess it's it's probably just, okay, that's the kid that the other kids are following, you know, so I don't know what it was
specifically. Reasonable definition, yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it was just that in a sense. For whatever reason, it just seemed to be that way. And I don't think I noticed that at the time or even thought, oh, I'm the leader of this group. I mean, looking back now, probably, you know, I was, but So I'm sure that's, you know, what he saw.
What were the kind of things that he did to try to nurture you then?
Yeah, really just spend time with me. I remember him, we laugh about this now when we're together. Him taking me and like another guy, it wasn't just the two of us, but, you know, to these conferences that he was going to. And in hindsight, they were ridiculous conferences, like really fundamentalist conferences, or like he didn't know at the time or whatever, you know, guys in suits and the whole deal. And, you know, we kind of chuckle and laugh at that now. But I guess as he was doing stuff, he would just bring me along. He would take me on hospital visits. Just spend
how
time.
Old, how old were you at this point?
I was a teenager, 17.
Okay.
You know, 16, 17, 18.
So he was really giving you opportunities.
Yeah,
to
I mean,
see
just
ministry,
bring me along. Yeah. We would hang out, and it was real relational ministry. So there were always a group of us hanging around his house or the church or, you know, playing basketball and all those sorts of things. So just real relational ministry, but him inviting me into actually seeing what ministry was like as well. And giving me opportunities, you know, to, you know, lead Bible study or to like our youth worship was terrible. We were like singing the backing tracks, and so I just bought a guitar and taught myself how to play the three chords that you need to know to lead worship. And
as long as you have a capo.
Yeah. I'm king of the capo. So those sorts of things. I just said, hey, you know, why don't I do this instead of these cassettes and, you know, things like that. So
Interestingly, I'm just interested to know, as you now find yourself in church ministry and leadership, are there ways in which Lonnie's philosophy of ministry, you know, that you've adopted some of his philosophy of ministry?
Yeah, probably. I mean, probably more in church planting in those early days, you know, guys who are now on staff with me and elders and, you know, has planted another church was that. They were hanging out in my house. We were feeding them. They were single at the time, you know, and just lots of time together. Them, you know, it's all those, you know, discipleship was us, you know, getting pizza together. It was us hanging out. It was, you know, now it was going to the pub and things like that. So, it was just those, you know, thousand different conversations that you would have, not the kind of set times that you would sit down for Bible study. So,
I mean,
those were important
too. Unstructured. A lot of ways. It's interesting just in terms of that relational sort of side of ministry, even the relational side of leadership. Some of the stuff I chatted about in the previous episode of the podcast with Rick Hill.
Yeah,
just talking a little about relational leadership and the value of that, which is different from the idea of a leader as somebody who simply stands at the front and tells everybody what to do.
You know what? Maybe I've seen so many of those kind of like alpha, you know, leading from the front in very strong ways go badly. Admittedly, more in America than here, but that, I don't know, maybe I've had an aversion to that, and that's just not really, you know, my style. I'm probably much more relational, and let's come alongside and build a team and, you know, things like that.
I'm going to throw this at you a little bit. Leader listening, so there's a leader listening to this, he says, that's all very well, but it doesn't come so easily to me.
There's a sense
in which you lead out of your personality.
Sure, no, absolutely.
But there must be also things that you've just got to say, well, you need to develop in some way.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's not all personality, and it can't be, but it also can't be, I think, divorced from your personality as well. So we're going to lead in different ways for sure. and one isn't necessarily wrong or right in that way. But yeah, there are definitely things you need to be skilled in and have competence in, no doubt, especially if it's ministry, you know, handling the word, being able to teach, being able to communicate, you know, being able to draw people to a vision and an idea, build a team. You know,
those you see that that's the relational bit. I'm it sounds like I'm putting words in your mouth. I realize I am, but I don't quite want to do that. The relational aspect of leadership then becomes quite important in drawing people together, doesn't it?
It is for me. I wouldn't know how to do it any other way. Yeah. To be honest with you, it's the only way I know how to do that. So, and you know, there's weaknesses to that as well. It takes longer. It takes more time. You probably can't go as fast in a lot of ways.
Sometimes if you go to an extreme, you probably never get anything done.
Well, it can be. Yeah, productivity might take a hit, but I think it's worth it in the end, to be
right.
honest with you.
If you want to, the African proverb that if you want to get there fast, go on your own.
That's right.
If you want to get there, what's the rest?
I can't remember, but it's, if you want to, it's like quality or
going
whatever.
With others. Yeah. Traveling with others is going
to, it's true. And I actually just said to our guys, yesterday, I sent them a little link to an article that I had read. I said, we need to play together more than we used to, you know, that actually having more relational, recreational kind of time together as a team. So, I mean, as your church gets bigger, you have more responsibilities, it gets harder and harder to do that. You have to be more intentional with that, which sounds kind of, you know, funny to say, but
yeah. I think I'd like to come back to that actually, because it actually reflects back to a conversation I had with another leader just a couple of days ago. This idea of team doing things together, and that can get lost in the busyness and so on. I'd love to come back to that and get you to talk a little bit more about
sure.
it. I also need to look up that African proverb.
I know.
put it in the program notes. That's what happens when you decide you try to quote something and you haven't prepared it. Going back then, back to seminary, what would be some of the highlights then in terms of seminary?
I honestly, I know there are guys that have all these wonderful memories of seminary. I got through seminary as fast as I kind of could.
Okay, right.
I mean, some of them are actually probably me realizing and sorting out what my theology was, you know, at the first school. I got thrown out of my Romans class.
Thrown out of a Romans class?
Yeah. I think maybe he assumed I was some kind of adversarial, hyper-Calvinist kind of person that he had, you know, had run-ins with before. And I genuinely wasn't. We were going through Romans and I was asking questions, you know. You get to Romans, you know, 9 through 11 and you have more of an Arminian teacher. You know, I was asking legitimate questions, trying to sort things out, and I think he just got frustrated and tossed me out.
He actually threw you out.
Just for that day.
Oh, just for that day.
Yeah, not like out of class permanently.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was me going, okay, well, maybe I'm, you know, not in the right place here. So
right, it's sort of theological.
It wasn't quite right.
But I
always enjoyed the more practical side of actually doing. I always enjoyed local church more than seminary. So I'm not an academic. I'm definitely more of a pastor. I enjoy reading, learning, thinking, you know, even some writing, but I could never see myself in the academy.
Sure. Yeah. Were alongside time in seminary, were you increasingly involved in?
So I've almost always done that side by side.
Yeah.
So, I was never in seminary without also working in ministry. So the whole time I was in seminary, I was also working for the church part-time.
The same church that Lonnie was?
Yeah, at the beginning, and then actually, the whole time, because then Lonnie went and took a pastorate in a church in Detroit and brought me on 3 months later at that church as well. So,
When you were still at seminary?
I had switched to the other.
Where's Covington Seminary?
Covington is actually down on the border of Tennessee and Georgia. So I finished that distance learning.
Okay. All right. Okay. My American geography.
I
wouldn't want to be pushed.
No, they're not anywhere near each other.
That
kind of answers that question. That's why, you know, most of my memories are, you know, just basically me with books and sorting stuff out. And most of my relational time was in the local church during that time.
What were you doing?
So I was a youth pastor and stroke worship leader for a while. And then during my time in the States. Mm-hmm. And then when I came here, I was an associate minister.
Okay. So when did you come? When did you come to Ireland then?
So, goodness, that's been 2005. So
14 years now. 14 years, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Unmarried in the, you know, in the intervening years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, married
immediately after
almost
seminary,
immediately.
Yeah.
Well, during seminary.
Seminary.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So we'll be married 25 years in December.
Yeah. People will think you're really old.
I'll be 45 in July. So.
So married very young. Yeah.
I was 20. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, was Sue also then involved a lot in church stuff?
Yeah. I mean, that's where we met. You know, it's really where we developed our friendship. We were really in the same kind of friendship group for 2 years before we started dating. And, we've always kind of done ministry as part of our relationship. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the move to Ireland, it's a big... I know there are family roots and so on.
Yeah.
But still, it's, you know, you could easily have thought, well, Ireland is where I grew up there for a
sure.
bit. That's part of my past.
Yeah.
What would have put it into your heart to come back?
Well, it's not like we never came back. So,
sure.
I mean, we've been back and forth here. You know, we come back every year and a half, 2 years or so. And so, so it's always kind of felt like second home or home, you know, just feel like, you know, it didn't feel like we were moving to a foreign country. You know, it felt like you were moving from one home to another home, really. So, you know, if we'd have moved to a different country, then I probably would have felt more of that. But, yeah, I mean, it was definitely different for sure. But, it was when we were offered the job, we were actually here leading a team of students doing some student work. With Rich Hill Presbyterian, and just had developed a relationship with them. Met Alistair, the minister there, while we were here on visiting family, and just kind of hit it off and kept in touch. And you know, probably had a similar philosophy of ministry, you know, at that time, and enough shared theology to you know get on. And so, yeah.
So, but you had been. In a Baptist church, you'd originally gone to a Baptist seminary.
Yeah.
And then you came to work in Rich Hill Presbyterian.
Yeah.
So did you baptize children with your hands, with your fingers crossed behind your back?
I did it. That was part of the agreement. I said, as long as I don't have to touch babies and water at the same time, then we'll be okay. Because I, you know, I'm a Reformed Baptist. So we have enough in common that, you know, it's fine. So I didn't get involved in church government and baptisms, and we were happy. So
your role there was youth pastor?
No, in Rich Hill it was kind of an associate assistant minister. So mm-hmm.
Okay, big
yeah,
point, right?
Yeah,
right. Is that quite remarkable though that a Presbyterian church?
It would.
I could see youth pastor.
Yeah,
but an associate minister, basically.
Yeah. No, I mean it was, and you know. Yeah, I think so. Part of it was they were growing very, very quickly. So, you know, I think they had gone from 70-odd people when Alistair took over. At this point, they were now 300, 350, had built a new building. And I think just needed somebody with some experience with, you know, larger church, fast-growing churches, things like that, which I'd been a part of in the States. So probably wouldn't get somebody with that experience coming out of Union right away or something like that. So... yeah, a bit of a risk probably, but probably knew that, listen, I wasn't going to be there long, long term. That was probably, you know, 5-year project at best. So,
So what was your responsibility there?
Yeah. Well, I oversaw youth ministry and men's ministry. I would preach, you know, just basically this stuff that Al needed.
Yeah.
He did probably more of the official ministerial stuff of weddings and funerals and, you know, anything that you needed to wear a collar for and, you know, that sort of thing. So,
so you never had to wear a collar?
So, no, I mean, they're pretty laid back. Yeah. He didn't wear a collar except for, you know, weddings and funerals and things, formal occasions.
Yeah.
So, no, we got on quite well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I look back at my time there quite warmly and fondly. So,
right. What were you learning during that time?
Yeah. I think part of it was, you know, I was thinking back to that. I'd really done youth ministry up until that point. So it was, it was probably learning how the church fit together as a whole, not just, you know, cordoned off with the young people. Probably it was during that time that I really started to think seriously about how preaching ministry really affected the whole of the church as well. And so it was there that I was really getting more reps in the pulpit on a regular basis. And so obviously thinking through that and, you know, philosophy of preaching and things like that, learning that there and just observing Alistair and even how he had to, you know, lead in a church governance situation that I wasn't as familiar with. You know, I was part of the elder team back in Detroit, but yeah, so just watching how the church, I think, fit together. And then obviously being in a smaller country, watching even how churches and denominations interacted with each other. You can't quite see that as well in the States because it's such a big place, but mm-hmm. here you pick all that up quite, you know.
Tell us more.
Easily, so.
Yeah. What were you noticing about?
Yeah.
About how denominations got along or didn't get along?
Yeah, well, that's probably it more than anything is they can be a bit siloed off and, you know, a bit, I don't know, there is a sense of, you know, kind of, I don't know if it's not, doesn't seem antagonistic or maybe even intentional in some ways. It just kind of happens where people just stay in their own kind of tribes, their own silos, yeah. and there's not a lot of, you know, cross-denominational things that, you know, happen here, maybe outside of NEMA or, you know, something like that.
Sure. I mean, I've wondered about this and I've wondered whether, it, to some extent, it's more subtle than that, that, you know, I think people are a little less concerned about denominational labels than they used to be. And that's why, you know, someone who's maybe been in a Baptist church or moved to an area where there's a really good Presbyterian church
can
go to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
the label doesn't matter. But yeah. I think that despite that, there is still, I mean, you talk about being siloed off.
Yeah.
And I think there is still that sense of silos where a certain kind of Baptist and a certain kind of Anglican and a certain kind of Presbyterian will gather together. I mean, you mentioned NEMA.
Sure.
I think of some of the summer conferences that happen
that
tend to have, they break denominational walls, but they still have a bit of a stamp in terms of theological emphasis.
Yeah, I mean, I look at friends in, even in England and things like that, where you'll have like the Northeastern Gospel Partnership. I mean, unless I'm just unaware of them, there's nothing like that here yet. Or, you know, where you have churches that would regularly meet together, you know, quarterly or, you know, every, you know, whatever it may be, because they're in the same area or, hey, let's partner.
The whole church meet together rather than just the leaders?
Oh, no, I mean the leaders, but those, at least those leaders meeting together, you know, to talk about, hey, how are we going to reach East Belfast together? Or are there ways that we could partner together or work together? Or, you know, because we all, you know, believe the gospel together.
Yeah.
And so obviously there might not be churches that fit into that.
Yeah.
But certainly there, I mean, in East Belfast there are, so, you know, why aren't we?
Does it not happen?
No.
Okay, right.
No.
Okay.
Well, not that I'm aware of. Maybe it's all happening and I'm unaware of it. But I've asked around and it doesn't seem to be happening. No.
Yeah.
No.
I think there are some areas and they're probably,
sure.
I think there are some parts of the country and
things
are probably better. I know when I was in Port Stewart, you know, I would have met regularly with a couple of local Presbyterian ministers from the
well, and that's true. I mean, when I was on the Ormo Road when we were first planted village, you know, the ministers there got together once every, you know, so often to pray together. I think that was kind of born out of necessity and the troubles, but it didn't go much beyond.
Okay,
that.
So there's more, and the way you say it, there's more to be done.
I think so. Yeah, I think there's a lot more potential there. Yeah.
Okay, so how long did you stay in Rich Hill?
We were there, I guess, about 3.5 years.
Right. Okay, and what next?
So that's really when we started to sense God calling us to plant. So I had still have a younger brother who's 9 years younger than me. So he came back from the States about 6 months after I did as well. And he was a musician and I was playing in a band down at the time. They started to kind of get more notoriety and
which, what was this, what was the band?
Well, they're no longer together now, but they were called the Lowly
Knights.
Yeah. So they were opening for Snow Patrol and, you know, playing the Odyssey and things like that, which is kind of cool. So I started spending more time down in the city in Belfast and kind of in those venues and, you know, places like that. And, you know, people would ask, oh, you're John's brother. Yeah. You know, why would you come back from America? Sort of a thing. Well, my job brought me back. What do you do? And then I had to tell him I'm a Presbyterian minister, so which is a bit of a buzzkill, you know. So, but that's all I did. So that's what I said, and that kind of led on to what essentially was the same conversation dozens of times, where I started to notice a pattern, and it was that conversation, that pattern, that kind of led us to go, I think there's room here for, you know, there's a subculture of young creative adults that are a bit disaffected. Disenfranchised by church, either the perception or the reality of that. They were open to God, Jesus, but, you know, when it came to kind of institutional church, they just didn't see that as an accessible thing. And so that kind of bothered us enough to say, well, maybe there's some work that could be done there. So
that was the beginning of a sense of...
We certainly didn't come back here to plant a church. Yeah. So... we came back here, you know, because we were offered a position. And so, but yeah, it was kind of that, me meeting a whole subculture, I guess, that existed that weren't being really reached or connected to. So, yeah.
So that's the origins of what is now Village Church.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Village Church. We're almost at the end of this episode.
Sure.
But just you know, as we wrap this little bit of our conversation up, and we can come back to the stages of the growth of the church and so on. We can come back to that. But what's Village Church like today?
Yeah, so we just celebrated our fifth birthday anniversary from our public launch. Now, the project of Village is probably close to 8 years old, but so we are 5 years old. We've planted a second congregation back where we started on the Ormo Road in South Belfast.
We're sitting here. We're in East Belfast. We're just across the road, really, from
Kind of Hollywood Arches, Bloomfield,
and the wardrobe, and so on.
Yeah,
we're sitting in one of the rooms.
Yes,
great story about how you got this.
Yeah, this is formerly Bloomfield Baptist Church. Yeah. So, between both congregations, I would say, you know, there's probably 250 of us kicking around. So
that between.
Between East and South.
How did you get the building?
We were basically meeting in Cook Presbyterian in their halls, and we just outgrown them, and there wasn't any other venue really on the Ormo Road, so we knew that we would have to find something else, although our heart really was for that area. And I had heard that that Bloomfield was closing down, and we were driving past it one night to drop off a friend who's now one of our elders, and saw the lights on. So pulled in, and the door was open, came in, and literally there were two elderly women taking their pews out of the church. They were
taking their pews out.
Yeah.
To take them home as souvenirs or something?
I guess, like that, yeah, because about a third of them were gone when we acquired the building. Yeah, there's some in the cafe next door and the barbershop. But, we just approached the Baptist Association and said, hey, you know, we know, you know, this building's being closed down. You know, this is who we are. This is where we're at. And, you know, would there be any chance of having a conversation about renting the building or anything like that? And they were really, really gracious to us, and to cut a long story short, they essentially have let us use the building, you know, at no cost. Oh, I mean, there's been cost, but yeah. We had to do a lot of renovations. Yeah, the building wasn't in great shape on the interior, so we had to do a lot of work inside, but yeah.
Fantastic. So here you are, right in the middle of East Belfast.
Yeah, not where we thought we'd be, but this is.
Listen, we're going to pause it there, and we'll come back next time, and I'm going to ask you, I'm going to begin by asking you a question. How do you plant a church? But thanks for sharing today, Lucas, and look forward to chatting a bit more.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Lucas, and thank you for taking the time to listen to the podcast. Lucas will be back next week. Make sure to join us, and in the meantime, have a good week.